Good evening. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse, and you're listening to Teen Money Matters. I'm your host, Jed Dikatari. Teens have enough to think about with growing up, such as societal pressures from peers, parents, family, and more. So how can young people set themselves up for financial success? This program will explore ways to save, budget, and understand the importance of managing money for the future, including interviews with fellow teens and insight from local experts in the financial world. Tonight we feature teen guest Ken Zhang from Parkland High School. Hey, Ken.
Hello.
So before we get started, could you tell us more about you in terms of your interests, hobbies, future plans, and anything else?
I'm really interested in biology, and I'm not that many other hobbies.
All right. So before we get started asking you the questions, I'll just give a brief introduction on negotiation. So negotiation is essentially a discussion between two different parties to solve an issue that both the parties can compromise on. So it can take place between buyers and sellers, employers and employees, or two countries, even at a larger scale. So it can go from really small scales to really large scales. And successful negotiation usually involves compromises on the part of one or all of the parties. So in a standard negotiation, there's usually different stages. It starts off with preparation. So before negotiations begin, each party conducts research and prepares their goals and potential concessions. And this involves gathering information about the other party's needs, preferences, and constraints. Then you exchange information. So both the parties exchange information about their priorities, interests, and alternatives. And the exchange helps build understanding and enables parties to identify potential areas for disagreement or agreement. After that, that's the main phase of negotiation, which is proposals and counterproposals. So both parties present proposals or offers to address each other's needs and preferences. And these proposals can involve specific terms, such as quantity, price, time, or other conditions. And in response, the other party may counter with alternative counterproposals, seeking to find common ground or negotiate a better term. And then the negotiation involves back and forth exchange of offers, counteroffers, and concessions, which is called bargaining. So parties may engage in different tactics, such as making persuasive arguments, emphasizing strengths, or leveraging their concessions to gain advantages. And the negotiation process may also involve different creative problem solving to find mutually acceptable solutions that meet the interests of all parties that are involved. Lastly, once the parties have reached an agreement that satisfies their needs, they'll formalize the agreement and they will close the deal. Although it seems like negotiation only happens at large scales, it happens in our everyday lives, such as when you make purchasing decisions like bargaining for a better price at a market or negotiating terms with a service provider. And this is really important in terms of personal finance because negotiation is really pivotal for financial well-being. It helps individuals achieve their financial goals, whether it's negotiating a higher salary, securing favorable terms on loans or mortgages, or haggling for discount on purchases. And it also plays a crucial role in managing expenses and navigating financial challenges, such as discussing repayment plans with creditors or negotiating rent with your landlords. Now we'll move on to the questions with you, Ken. Just to start off, when you hear the word negotiation, what comes to mind and how would you define it in your own words?
So when I hear negotiation, I think of like just two people coming together to discuss each other's needs and find a common ground between each other's goals. And this common ground might not be the best for both parties, but they make everybody sort of happy rather than nobody giving to their demands. And I think that negotiation is just that, the intercommunications between the two parties in order to reach a common ground that fits both of their interests really well.
I really like how you emphasize that not every party gets the absolute best that they can get. Rather, it's a compromise. So some things you have to concede to the other party, and that's all about negotiating that find a common ground. So can you think of a time when you had to negotiate with someone? And it doesn't have to be finance related. So when you did the negotiation, how did you do it and what was the outcome of it?
Like just certain parties, like you can negotiate with group members on projects on what to do, how much each other is doing. Everybody's final goal is getting a good grade on the project, but everybody wants to do the least amount of work. So you have to find concessions between what parts you want to do and what other parts you want to do. You find a common ground that each other, I'm going to do this part that I like, I'm going to do this part that I like, that gives everybody what they want. without damaging someone else's interests.
Yeah, and I definitely agree with that. So, like, as you mentioned with group projects, so many teenagers have to go through that. And I'll give like a personal anecdote here too. So whenever I work with group projects, everyone wants to do different things. So let's say someone wants to make a presentation while another person wants to make a poster. So sometimes it's really hard to find the best of everyone, especially when there's more than two people that are involved. So you have to consider what person A wants, person B, person C, and so on and so forth. Yeah. But I think it does teach really valuable skills, because negotiation isn't just finance related. It can involve other things such as everyday task of grocery shopping or finding something at a local market that you want at a better price. So I think that's really important. How do you think negotiation skills can benefit teenagers in their daily lives beyond just buying and selling things?
Like, for example, if you're in a school or any sort of like professional settings, you can negotiate with your superiors for better interest, whether that be a better grade or more income in a job. Negotiation can really help you find a way to maximize your own interests rather than just sitting there with what other people give you. You can fight for your own interests.
And now I'm going to give you like an example, and I want you to come up with how you would approach negotiation. So let's say you want to convince your parents that you want to go out with your friends, or you want to get some new clothes or some new items. So how would you approach negotiation, and what arguments or compromises would you use to persuade them?
Like, if I wanted, for example, if I'm negotiating with my parents, I want object A or I want object B, I need to tell like my parents on what they want first, rather than just telling them that I want this, I want that. For example, you can say like, I got all A's in school, or I'm going to do chores around the house for like a while in exchange for what I want, rather than just approaching them in the first place. I'm just saying that I want this, I want that, or I want this. You can offer up what you're going to do in exchange for the objects, rather than just to negotiate more in a more easier fashion than just stating I want this, you know?
Yeah. And I definitely agree. I think what you said here shows like, we negotiate all the time without realizing it. So even as teenagers, like even below teenagers, elementary school, middle school, high school, all the way, we've been negotiating for different things such as buying a new game or going to eat out or buying new clothes and stuff like that. So it's really important in that circumstance as well. How do you think teenagers can develop and practice their negotiation skills?
I think teenagers can practice their negotiating skills by, for example, finding a job where you have to negotiate with people that might be your superiors or might just be your peers. Or you can go into school clubs, for example, debate or mock trials, where you have to practice public speaking and not arguing, but debating with other people, discussing things with other people, joining more group projects and to negotiate between your peers to practice the very important skill that is negotiation.
Yeah, and I think for me personally, I think the best way is just to go through the everyday life experiences. Yeah, many times you have to negotiate in circumstances. So let's say that you're at school and you want this thing and the other person doesn't want it. So you have to find a way to either get that thing, convince the other person to also get it. And I think those little situations come in handy, especially in your later life when you're an adult and you have to apply those situations.
Do it in a professional setting.
Yeah. Do it in a professional setting, apply it at a larger scale. Yeah, I think that's really important to develop your skills early on. I know you've mentioned a bit of this already, but if you could expand on it, how do you think negotiation skills would be useful in school, like collaborating on group projects, resolving conflicts with classmates, or discussing grades with your teachers?
If you're really good at negotiating, you can, well, that's not as good from looking at your groupmates' perspective or your teacher's perspective. You can use your negotiation skills to minimize the amount of work you have to do, and to have everybody do what they want, and you guys can all cooperate to get a good grade on an assignment. Or if you're discussing grades with the teachers, you can present yourself as someone who really like worked really hard in this period of time, and you can just, if you're discussing grades with your teachers, you can just use your negotiation skills to maybe convince them to, for example, round you up on an assignment that they normally wouldn't.
Yeah, I think that's really relevant to a lot of the teenagers here, especially in the Lehigh Valley area as well. They have to go through situations at school, and sometimes they don't know how to deal with it, and they may end up choosing or doing the thing that's not to the best interest of them, even though they could have gotten something that would have suited them better. So I think it's important that the teenagers and young adult learn the negotiation skills early on so they can apply it to school and then beyond in their personal and professional life. And another thing I'd just like to add, it's many teenagers and young adults, especially in high school, you start to get jobs and summer jobs, you work part-time during school, and negotiation is really helpful for that as well. You can negotiate for better hours, you can negotiate for a better salary, you can negotiate for work benefits. So it's important to get started on that early on because you are dedicating your time, and it's best to get the most out of it as you possibly can. So looking ahead to your future, how would you envision negotiation playing a role in your personal and professional life? And what goals do you have for improving your negotiation skills?
In the future, I feel like negotiation is going to be really important in discussing salary or benefits in my professional life. And in my personal life, is whether it's with friends or family, it's with this discussing just personal interests. Like if you want to do this, if you want to do that, that stuff in discussing stuff that you might not even know that it is negotiation. In my opinion, that your goal and when you're improving your negotiation skills is that you should always be confident when you're talking, and also when you should put yourself in your other person's shoes on what they would want in the situation, so you can compromise with them to make your life, for lack of a better word, easier.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, I really like that, and I think it applies to a lot of the teenagers. So just being confident and improving your public speaking skills helps a lot. And I know it's helped me a lot too, especially from middle school onwards. So yeah, I think that's really great advice. And if you had to, just as a ending last question, if you had to give advice to teenagers as a whole on personal finance, what would you give them?
I would say that you should be responsible with your money. Don't make a budget. Don't overspend your money. Don't spend more money than you can have. Be mindful of what you have, especially with credit cards. It feels so easy to pay stuff with credit cards that you might not realize how much you've actually spent. So just be mindful of your money. Set aside budgets and stuff that I can use this month. Just be mindful. Think about your actions.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
We're going to take a short break. You're listening to Teen Money Matters with our guest, Ken Zhang. And we are talking about negotiation. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Hi, I'm Jaitha Kathari, and on Teen Money Matters, I work to set young people up for financial success through interviews with fellow teens and financial experts. WDAY's youth media program brings a younger voice to public radio, and support from listeners like you is the best way to keep these young voices on the air. So please donate now. Call 610-758-8810. Or go to WDIY.org.
WDIY members have exclusive access to our weekly member ticket giveaway. That's a new drawing every week for the best events the Lehigh Valley has to offer. Concerts, festivals, film screenings, theater performances, and more. Last year, WDIY gave away over 2,000 tickets to our members. So don't miss your chance. Become a WDIY member today. Call 610-694-8100 extension 4 or visit wdiy.org.
Welcome back to Teen Money Matters. We are talking about negotiation with our guest, Mr. William Henderson. Before we went to break, we were speaking about the teenage perspective behind negotiation with Parkland freshman Ken Zhang. Now we will be talking to Mr. William Henderson, Chief Investment Officer at Valley National Financial Advisors. Hello, Mr. Henderson.
Hello, how are you? Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, thank you for coming on. So before we get started, could you tell us more about you and the work you do as the Chief Investment Officer at Valley National Financial Advisors?
Sure. So Valley National Financial Advisors is a $1.5 billion registered investment advisor headquartered in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. And the job of Valley National is to manage people's money and all types of clients. My job as Chief Investment Officer is to review, follow, and recommend investments for the advisors to then use with their clients. And I review everything from individual stocks, bonds, mutual funds, exchange-traded funds, private placements, and then sometimes alternative investments. And we have an investment team of 5 people besides myself.
So the first question I have for you today is just how would you define negotiation, and why is it a crucial skill in both your professional and personal life?
Sure. I mean, it's a great question in the sense that, you know, negotiation is such a broad term, and you negotiate so many things in life, and you don't even know you're doing it most of the time. You know, a lot of negotiation is set long beforehand. So you go and buy a Coke at a store. The negotiation for that price has already been set by the store owner and the distributor of Coke. So that negotiation is out of your hands, yet you are participating in it because you're buying and they're selling. You get more granular, get down to your level, where you may want to have someone take care of your lawn. That person comes and says, you know, how much would you like to pay? And you say, well, how much are you charging? Then you talk this number, that number, and in the end, you've negotiated an agreement where both of you walk away pretty happy. And I think the reason it's an important personal skill for both professional life and your life outside of the work is so much of what you do is a negotiation. And it's really the importance of it is that both parties walk away and feel as if they got a fair deal. You don't want to have one party completely unhappy and the other party really happy. Neither would ever do business again together.
I really like how you mentioned at the beginning that negotiation happens without us even realizing it. So many times we only think of negotiation as ones that we're actively participating in, such as like negotiating a price for a service or another item. But as you mentioned, like for the price of Coke, it's already been negotiated and we're part of it, but we're not an active member in it. So I think that's important to understand as well. So could you share a personal anecdote or example where effective negotiation skills significantly impacted a financial decision or outcome?
Sure. The vast majority of my career was, that's 26 years I spent at BlackRock, and I was a bond portfolio manager. So I traded fixed income securities. And there isn't an exchange for bonds like there is an exchange for the stock market. If you want to buy a stock, you look up the price, and the New York Stock Exchange has a price. Sometimes it's a little bit different than what they're saying, but you know roughly what the price should be. In the bond market, everything is really a negotiation. Every part of it is. So I would want a particular bond. I'd call up a bunch of brokers and say, this is what I'm looking for. Each of the brokers would then come back with an offering of their bond at their price. I would look at those prices and say, well, I like this. I don't like this. I don't like this. And I would go back to one and say, I like your price. However, could you improve it a little bit? Maybe they improve it. And then I would buy the bond. So the entire part of my job, which was buying and selling the bonds, was a negotiation. And if it wasn't effective and a happy outcome on both parties, so take BlackRock would be trading with, say, Morgan Stanley. If the trader at Morgan Stanley didn't feel as if he or she sold the bond to me at a good price, and if I didn't feel as if I bought the bond at a good price, neither of us would do business again together. But mm-hmm. The whole market is based on the premise that I will be doing trades over and over again with many brokers and many dealers, and all of us are generally happy at the end, or the system doesn't work. The way the bond market works, you have to have an outcome where both parties feel as if they received a fair trade.
Yeah, so you essentially had to meet towards a common ground and set the price at that. What's another example outside of your professional work life in your personal life where you had to use a negotiation?
Okay, I mean, there's so many things. You know, as a homeowner, you're constantly dealing with contractors, right? Let's take a simple thing. You want to put a deck on the back of your house. Yeah. Your deck is not going to be exactly like the deck of the guy 3 blocks away. You may have a different scenario. Your deck may be taller, shorter, smaller, on a different slope or anything. So the contractor can't come and say, I charge $100 for every deck I do, because that just wouldn't work. Every deck would be more or less than that, and he would be either making money on everyone or losing money on everyone. So that contractor has to come to your house, scope out the project. Maybe he marks it off, takes some measurements, takes an estimate of how much wood he would need, how much materials, does he need more people? And then that person would come back to you and say, you know, here's my quote is $10,500. And you look at that and you say, well, I got another bid from someone else for $9,500, but I know you do good work because I've talked to a bunch of people. If you could come down a little bit in price, we would have a deal. He says, you know what, $10,500, I could probably do it for $10,300. And you go, great, I love it, sold. You get your deck for the price that you feel is good from a contractor that knows how to do good work. He sells you the deck and the project for a price where he knows he can make money.
So when it comes to these financial negotiations, what are some common misconceptions that people have, and how can understanding different principles of negotiation help debunk these myths?
That's an interesting question. I would think the most common thought in negotiation is that most people think, oh my gosh, I'm not going to get the best end of this deal. And he thinks the seller is not going to give him the best of the deal. And everybody in that deal wound up unhappy, right? So you know what I'm alluding to. You know, you don't want to get that in every deal. Yeah. Everybody, and a lot of people feel like most transactions end where no one's happy. If that were the case, no transactions would ever occur. Why would you do a transaction over and over and over again if every time you lost money, every time you were unhappy, and every time you hired people, they weren't happy either? The most common misconception is that everybody gets, you know, they're disadvantaged in every transaction, and no one winds up with a happy end at the end of the transaction, when it's quite the opposite. In order for business to work over and over again and transactions to occur over and over again, everybody has to feel like they got a square deal.
You would say that you have to keep continuously trusting the other party as well while you're negotiating?
Oh, absolutely. Trust is so much in the world these days. People probably feel, oh, there's no one out there is trustworthy. I would say it's quite the opposite. Almost everybody I deal with, and I'm on a lot of boards, I work for one company, but I do a lot of charitable work for organizations like churches and golf clubs, where we're always dealing with contractors, we're always dealing with professionals. And I feel all the time you get referrals and you wind up with a positive experience. Otherwise, it just wouldn't work. I think that's really important to understand that it's probably the opposite of what people think. You know, I'm going to go out into the real world and no one's going to care about me. Everybody's going to want to be after themselves. Very few people do it that way. And if you're that type of person, you'll get a bad reputation and you won't last in any business.
How do negotiation processes differ in the different financial situations, like negotiating for a service, negotiating a salary, purchasing a home, or securing investment funding?
So that's three or four different things.
Yeah.
Negotiating a salary, it depends from, you know, where you are coming from. If you're coming out of school, most people know what a starting salary should be for a person graduating with a finance degree from a standard university. That, you know, it's somewhere between, you know, $80,000 and $105,000. As long as you're within those bands, you're going to be happy. When you're buying a house, there's so many different factors to take into account. And of course, we know the three rules of real estate, the only three things that matter: location, location, location. So when it comes to buying a house, you'll want to find a house in the right neighborhood with the right price that you can afford with all the things that you want. Now, let's say you find that house. Negotiating the price, you involve three different parties besides yourself. You involve the selling agent, the buying agent that's working for you, and then the seller of the house. So four different parties have to agree in order for that transaction to work. That's not a party between you and the carpenter that built your deck. That's two parties. This is a four-party transaction where it's not going to happen unless all four people believe they're getting a fair deal. So that's a much more complicated decision and process. That's why it takes so long. That's why there's so much paperwork involved. You know, you buy a Coke, it's a simple transaction. A dollar here, a Coke here, you walk out the door. You've quenched your thirst. The seller got a dollar for his Coke and they're happy. A house, the closing probably takes 2 weeks to a month because everything has to get done. You have to inspect the house. You have to go through permitting. You have to check a title. You know, all of that are all different things that you have to learn about. So that's a much, much more complicated situation, much more complicated purchasing action. The last thing you ask about is, you know, an investment. Mm-hmm. So a lot of it is pretty easy. You want to buy a stock. You go online, you can look at the price of almost any stock online very easily. You go to Yahoo Finance, you go to the Wall Street Journal, you go to Bloomberg. It's all there. You want to buy a share of Apple, it's $170 a share. It may be $170.02 from Schwab. It may be $170.10 from Merrill Lynch. Who really cares? You're getting your share of Apple. You roughly know what it should be. Much easier situation. Money to the broker. Broker sends money to the seller of Apple. The shares go to the broker, the shares go to you.
So what are some potential risks or pitfalls young adults should be aware of when negotiating, and how can they mitigate these risks to ensure a positive and favorable outcome?
So the most important thing is you have to go into the negotiating process with an understanding of exactly what it is you're buying or selling. You have to do what we call in the investment world your due diligence. That means you have to go in and learn about what it is you're about to transact in. Let's take the very simple example of the coat. How much work has to go into that? Very little. You know exactly what it is. Let's say you're buying a car. A little bit more understanding. You need to know the difference between a Hyundai Sonata, a Honda Accord, and a Ferrari. All of them takes different due diligence and different understanding. If you're paying $30,000 for a car, you might spend 2 or 3 hours researching it. If you're spending $200,000 for a car, you're going to spend a lot more time researching it. Same goes for investments. The more money you're putting out, the more time you're going to have to spend to understand what it is you're buying. And if you don't, you risk a pitfall of not being on the happy end of that negotiation. You know, you really need to understand what it is you're buying. It's as complicated as the house situation. Let's say you wanted to buy a house online without looking at it, sight unseen. Fine, I'll take it, send the person $200,000 and you buy a house. What are the risks there when you actually show up to your house? They're immeasurable. It could be crazy. So it's all related to the amount of due diligence and time and effort you're willing to put out. That's going to make the transaction a right transaction.
Yeah. So essentially people should be doing their homework, I guess you could say, on the things. And this doesn't just apply to negotiation, but also other financial situations like maybe in loans or real estate or other investments.
Absolutely. You used the right term. It is like learning about it and doing your due diligence, doing your research. It's all the same. If you don't spend time learning about it, you have a much greater risk of not knowing what, you know what you buy, really understand it. You know, the concept, buyer beware, you know, like have to do your due diligence. You have to do your front end legwork to make sure that you're getting exactly the process. So you go to a doctor, or maybe you go blindly to a doctor, but don't typically you ask around and get some referrals. Is this person a good doctor? Is this person a good dentist? Same with the car. You go to get car maintenance. Do you make sure that the mechanic is trustworthy? And if you need an oil change, he doesn't say, hey, you need an oil change. The starter doesn't work. You need a new carburetor. Your exhaust system's old. Let's change the filter. You know, you don't want that type of mechanic. You want someone that's trustworthy. So as small as the transaction is or as large as the transaction is, it's all directly proportional to the amount of research you do.
Mm-hmm. And just to end off today, what advice do you have for teenagers and young adults about personal finance as a whole?
I think young adults, personal finance is very important. And I know primary school does not spend enough time educating kids on things like money and investing. I would say there's one or two simple rules. I've talked a lot about the one, learn. Learn about it, read about it, understand about investments. There's so much free information out there. You don't need to spend any of your own money to learn about it. That's the first thing. Yep. The second thing is start early. The earlier you start investing your money, the faster you'll become wealthy. And I mean, that is a simple, simple thing. You save $50 a month. From the time you're old enough to understand what money is, through the rest of your life, you'll become wealthy. It's really simple. Mm-hmm. The third thing is do it often and don't stop, meaning continue to invest, continue to allow your money to grow.
So thank you so much for this conversation today. I really enjoyed having you on.
Thanks for having me on. Good luck. Have a nice weekend.
Thank you. You too. Thank you, listeners, for making time for this conversation. You can also find past episodes and other public affairs programming at wdiy.org. and on major podcast platforms. I'm Jadid Kathari, and this is WDIY 88.1 FM. Tune in next Thursday for more Lehigh Valley Discourse, and we'll see you next time on Teen Money Matters.
If you enjoyed this program, please go to wdiy.org or the WDIY app to share or become a WDIY member.